Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our weekly radio teleconference. This week on the floor of the Senate, we will be handling the Energy and Water Appropriations Bill as we try to move forward through the 13 appropriations bills that we must finish by September or October, if possible. And at the same time, as everyone in America is aware, we continue to work very, very aggressively on trying to deal with the proposed health care reform legislation that is moving in both the House and the Senate. At this point in time, the House is trying to move legislation. In the Senate, there is a Kennedy-Dodd bill, and there's also a bill in the Finance Committee on which I sit that is being negotiated but has not been completed. And the bottom line is that while there are many, many areas of cost saving that we can find, and most Americans really, when they talk about health care reform, are thinking about reducing the cost of health care rather than increasing it. Although we do have a lot of common ground in cost reduction measures that could be accomplished, the debate is instead focused on a proposal for a government takeover of the health care industry through the establishment of a government insurance company and over very, very extensive subsidies to be provided for those who do not currently have access to health care. And the cost overall of the proposals that are on the table ranges from $1 trillion up to, in some measures, up to $2 to $3 trillion, depending on the different evaluations that have been made of the cost of the legislation. I personally strongly oppose the notion that we should nationalize our health care and have the federal government step in and take over the provision of health care. Frankly, there are a tremendous number of things that we can do that could potentially reduce the cost of health care to the average American by as much as 30%. And it's those kinds of things that we ought to be focusing our debate on rather than a government takeover. There are a number of other issues that are out there, but I'll stop with that and throw it open for questions. And Leslie Shoemate, you are first on the list today.
Good morning.
Good morning.
In the rush, which seems to be the key word, all the news, all the focus is on the health care package. What happened to the cap and trade that the House passed? Where does that stand?
Well, you know, you are very correct to point out that while the focus and the talk is all about the health care plan, that Congress is engaged in other things. And one of the other things that Congress is engaged on is the proposed cap and trade system to deal with global warming. That legislation did pass the House, in a very rushed way. It was pushed through in a phenomenally aggressive way before it was even really able to be read and understood in the House, and barely passed in the House by a vote of, I think, 219 to 212. And it is now in the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. I sit on that committee, and we have been holding hearings on the House legislation for a number of weeks now. So although the health care legislation is taking center stage because of the president's insistence that Congress pass it before August, the cap-and-trade legislation is moving forward in the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, and I would expect that sometime after August you will see it move much more toward the front burner as an effort similar to that on health care to force it through under a very, very tight time pressure will be established.
It's become quite apparent that the public outcry to slow down is taking effect. Do you think that it will also affect this cap-and-trade bill?
I do. I think many, many Americans are getting extremely uneasy with the pace at which Congress is moving, and frankly, with the pace that Congress is moving on legislation that dramatically expands the role of the federal government in major parts of our economy. As I've said before, if you just look back 6 months or so, you see the United States government taking control of major parts of the mortgage industry, over 50% of the mortgages that are originated in terms of the Fannie and Freddie. You see major national banks, which are now either in their entirety or significantly owned and operated by the federal government. You see the takeover of the largest insurance company in the world, AIG. You see the takeover of the auto industry with Chrysler and GM. And you see a proposal for a establishment of a new government insurance company that will, in effect, take over health care delivery in the United States. and the list goes on. And Americans are becoming very uneasy, not only at the increased pace at which we see the federal government stepping in and taking over major sections of the private sector, but the concern is that they are moving rapidly to push them through under deadlines, and I believe that will impact the cap-and-trade legislation when it is pushed forward.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Dave Plourd.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
For several months, it's been kind of assumed that the Idaho National Guard would be called up shortly this year sometime. I've heard that that's not going to happen now. Have you heard anything to that effect? Or?
Dave, I have not heard anything finally with regard to that, so I apologize. I'm not going to be able to. I always get a question or two that I don't know the answer to, and I've learned not to speculate, but I have not had any definite word on that.
Okay. Last week you sent out a news release regarding the Forestry Conservation Act?
Yes.
Could you talk to that a little bit? How would that work?
Yes. This is legislation that I'm supporting with Senators Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell from Washington. The bill would protect private forest land from development by enabling nonprofit conservation organizations to use bonds to purchase the lands. The point, though, is that not that they would be taken out of forest activity or other farming activity, but the forest and farming activities would continue. And the idea here is to try to keep these forest lands and these farms in production to protect private property rights, protect jobs, and protect businesses, and maintain the agriculture and forestry activities that we have on our public land, our private lands.
Would those lands actually be sold then to these groups?
My understanding is that it would either be an outright sale or a sale of the development rights, and frankly, that's unclear at this point. I certainly would prefer that it be the sale of development rights rather than the actual outright sale of the land. But even if there were a sale of the land, I think that you would immediately see some of the major and minor actors in the timber industry, for example, becoming involved, as they already are, in purchasing the timber rights to those lands and continuing the operations of either farming activity or forest and timber activity through private sector operations.
Just so I'm clear, it says working forest lands, lands that are potentially workable but aren't right now. Would that apply there as well? Or?
Yes, I believe it would. Again, I'd have to go back and read the specifics, but my understanding is that if there were lands that were not currently in production but were potential in terms of being brought into production, that this legislation could assist there as well.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. And next is Jason Ford.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I know the concealed weapons amendment did not pass, or get enough votes to pass. I was wondering what some other positives or negatives you thought with the passing of the defense authorization bill.
I ultimately supported the defense authorization bill, even though it did have amendments attached to it that contained difficulties for me. I mean, there were a lot of non-germane amendments to the legislation that really should not have been attached to it. But the bottom line is this was major legislation to continue to refine and improve our defense posture. And one of my bills was also included in it. This was a bill that I had introduced relating to a housing partnership between the Mountain Home Air Force Base and the Shoshone Paiute Tribes. This doesn't apply just to Mountain Home and the Shoshone Paiute Tribes, but they are one of the major beneficiaries of the language. And what it does is it authorizes the Air Force, basically, to enter into a partnership between itself and the tribe, which could result in a number of housing units that are no longer used by the military to be transferred to the Duck Valley Indian Reservation. And this would be a model partnership where we can assist with housing on the Indian Reservation while we are also assisting the base in eliminating some of its unused assets. But nevertheless, whether it's this legislation or the overall modification and refinement and strengthening of our defense, I ended up voting for the legislation, even though, as is almost always the case these days, there were some things added to it which I would have preferred to see kept out.
All right, thanks.
Well, thank you very much, Jason. And next, Rory.
Well, good morning, sir. Pleasure.
Thank you very much.
What about a discussion about your vote against Sonia Sotomayor, sir? Can you talk a little bit about how you came to your decision?
Yes. First and foremost, let me say I did not make this decision lightly. Nominating and then voting to confirm someone for a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court of the United States is one of the most important functions, that confirmation vote, one of the most important functions that the U.S. Senate performs. And as I reviewed the material and information that came out during the hearings, as well as some of her writings and the case law that she has participated in terms of her judicial decisions, I became convinced that she should not receive a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court. Two or three very, very strong concerns that helped me or caused me to reach this conclusion were, first, her stand on interpretation of the Second Amendment right to bear arms. She's pretty well made it clear. In fact, she has written in a case that she participated in, that the Second Amendment right to bear arms does not apply to the states, meaning that the vast majority of Americans, under her interpretation of that amendment, would not have an individual right to bear arms under the Second Amendment. And to me, that is a very, very major, major problem. Secondly, she has said again and again and again that she believes that as a judge, it is proper to be able to pick and choose of the facts that you focus on so that you can get to the conclusion that you believe is the best conclusion. To me, this is just another way of saying that she would be an activist judge who would be focused on trying to develop and establish policy through judicial decisions rather than blindly, as the image we have of justice is a blind balance. Rather than applying the law to the facts and not trying to develop policy. And then finally, she has also made it clear that she believes that it is appropriate for a judge when interpreting the Constitution or the laws of the United States to refer to and rely on foreign law. And I very strongly disagree with the notion that our American judges should be relying on foreign law to interpret our Constitution or our other statutory law in this country. And the reason given for that was that we need to maintain and develop our stature and our standing in the international community, and that therefore we would need to rely on their laws as we interpret our own. And I just very strongly disagree with that approach as well. So for these reasons, primarily, I ultimately concluded that I could not vote to give her that lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court.
And the vote's today, right?
The vote, I believe, in the Senate Judiciary Committee is today, although the vote on the floor of the Senate has not yet been scheduled.
All right, then. Separately, if I may, sir, I wanted to ask you a little bit about meeting with the Energy Secretary earlier in the month. We had a bit of a backlog here, and then I didn't get to talk to you for a couple of weeks. But you were able to have a chance to question Secretaries Chu, Vilsack, and Salazar about your interest in nuclear power, and I wanted to know how you were regarded and welcomed by these folks.
You are correct, and if it's the meeting I'm thinking of, the hearing I'm thinking of, it was actually one of those hearings I just mentioned with Leslie that was relating to the global warming and cap-and-trade proposal,
yes, sir,
which I was very concerned about because I have a lot of concerns about the cap-and-trade proposal, but one of the major problems I have with it is that it contains a renewable energy standard that will not count nuclear energy as in the base, and that there did not seem to be a sufficient focus on utilizing nuclear energy as a part of our response to the issues contained in the legislation. When I raised those issues, the secretaries all indicated their support of nuclear power. And in the hearing, they went on to say that they believe that nuclear power was indeed an important part of our response to global warming. But I did not receive the kind of satisfactory response in terms of whether they would support changes in the legislation in that regard. Ultimately, I believe that they would probably accept changes, but I wish that they would be more active in advocating for the kinds of changes in the legislation that would dramatically increase the role of nuclear power. And I'm waiting still to see that kind of a stance taken by the administration.
remains to be seen, and it sounds like there's more work to be done.
That's exactly right.
Okay. Hey, thank you, sir.
Thank you. And finally, George Prentice.
Senator, good morning.
Good morning.
The Associated Press reports that three Democrats and three Republicans on the Senate Finance Committee were edging closer to a compromise on health care reform. Number one, are you one of those Republicans? And number two, what are you hearing about the compromise?
Well, first, no, I am not one of those Republicans. There are three Republicans on the Finance Committee who have been negotiating for more than a month now. And I specifically chose not to participate because the concerns I had with where this group was going were too great. And I did not feel that in good faith that I could negotiate with them when I knew that the things that they were going to try to be putting together were things that I could not accept. And in fact, Senator Hatch, who was one of them, recently stepped out of the negotiations for those very reasons. He said they're just going places where I can't, in good faith, negotiate with them on it. With regard to the reports that they are close to a deal, there have actually been reports like that just about every week now for the last month, where it's reported that we're close, and maybe the next day or the next day we'll see a deal coming out. And because of the complexity of the things they are negotiating, and because of some of the conversations that I have had with them as I talk to the folks who are in the room negotiating, I tend to believe that they are not as close to a deal as has been reported in the press. That being said, I do believe it sounds like they are getting closer and closer in concept to something that is far different from the Dodd-Kennedy legislation that is already out on the table, or the House legislation that is already out on the table. And so I guess the best answer to your question is I do think they're making progress, and I do think they may have gotten very close on some of the key issues, such as the government option and the questions as to how to finance the legislation. But I don't think that they are as close to a final deal as has been reported.
One more health-related question. I'd like some reaction from you on that report from the Centers for Disease Control on the H1N1 virus that up to 40% of the workforce could be affected in the upcoming flu season. Do you expect after the August recess to be more conversation and maybe even some action at a congressional level?
I do. If the predictions of that report are accepted and we see any kind of significant likelihood that that type of impact will be happening, I would expect that there will be congressional action. I don't know exactly what it will be because Congress has acted in the past already to significantly support the development of immunizations. And I think that the main function that Congress has in addition to the public notice type functions is in terms of supporting the development of an immunization response. However, I think whether it be oversight hearings or additional efforts to try to bring a strong, robust, successful immunization program forward, that you could expect to see congressional action if this report is accurate.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Any other questions?
One really quick one.
Sure.
Why is it a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court?
Well, isn't that in the Constitution?
I don't know. I was looking for it this morning, and I couldn't find it.
Well, you know, I'll have to double check on that. I should never take that last question, you know, Leslie.
Sorry.
but I'll double check on that.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator, I've got a last one if you have.
Oh, sure. Oh, great. Go ahead.
It's probably not that bad. As far as back to the nuclear question, as I recall that hearing, Secretary Chu promised some sort of announcement late this summer. What specifically was that? What are we waiting for there?
You know, I'm not recalling that he promised an announcement later this summer.
Okay, I'm sorry. I may have misheard.
No, you're probably right. I'm just not remembering it. So I'm going to have to go back and take a look at that. I do believe that we had been talking to him, and although I don't think this was specifically in the hearing, about getting him out to visit the lab later this summer, but you're probably referring to a much more policy-oriented announcement.
Probably so. I was guessing Gen 4 or cleanup or something.
Well, I'm sorry. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll go back and see if we can figure something out, and if we do, we'll get you the information.
Okay, I'm sorry.
All right, now no more last questions. All right, thank you, everybody.
Thank you, sir.
Bye.
Bye.